Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Nobody in Kansas City has sports like 96.5 The Fan.
Right side throw, touchdown! Kansas City, a 3-yard touchdown pass in overtime. Kansas City wins the game.
Welcome into The Drive with Carrington Harrison.
Back-to-back best sports talk hosts as voted on in the Pitch magazine.
Live from the Fan Studios, here's CDOT.
Let's do this. Another day, another dollar, another edition of The Drive. You are listening to The Drive on 96.5 The Fan, 96.5thefan.com, and also the Odyssey app. My name is Carrington Harrison. Excited, thrilled, delighted to be here with you on this wonderful, wonderful Monday after the Chiefs absolutely beat down on the Detroit Lions. We'll get to that coming up in just a little bit. We got a lot to get into in today's show. I went to my first Chiefs game as a fan in 5 years. I'll tell you guys about my experience out at Arrowhead Stadium. We'll talk a little bit of Mizzou in Alabama. No, I cannot raise my hand today, but you know what? Rob also can't raise his hand either. We are in this together. Now, I wish Drew could raise his hand, but honestly, I don't know what team Drew cheers for. He cheers for Mizzou and Kansas and Wisconsin, and I don't know what team he cheers for. Indiana, he can't raise his hand either. Put your hand down, Drew. Please do not try to participate in this segment. You got way too many favorite college teams. You cannot participate in this. We got a lot to get into in today's show. Again, my name is Carrington Harrison. Happy to be here. Rob Brenton is here taking you up until 6 o'clock, celebrating the Chiefs' win yesterday against the Detroit Lions. Before we get into it, I need you guys to do me a couple of favors. Number one, I need you listening to The Drive each day at 2 o'clock right here on 96.5 The Fan. Number two, I need you to tell one friend to check out the show. I mean, if you could tell two people to check out the show, I would really appreciate it. But you know what? Beggars can't be choosers. If you guys could just tell one person to check out the show, I would greatly appreciate it. And number three, and most important, I need you guys to remember that the open of the show is brought to you by our friends over at The Other Place. So if you're looking for a place to watch the Monday night doubleheader, you're looking for a place with great food specials, great drink specials, televisions everywhere, then go stop by and see our friends over at The Other Place. So I want to tell you two observations that I currently have about the Kansas City Chiefs, and we'll talk about the fight coming up in just a bit, because every portion of the fight is hilarious to me. Every single part of it is funny. But this is where I want to begin the show today. There are two things that I would say right now I feel very, very strongly about. Number one, this is the best version of Patrick Mahomes we have seen since the last time he won NFL MVP. If you want to go through the numbers right now for Patrick Mahomes, in his last four games, he is 98 of 145. He has thrown for a little more than 1,000 yards in his last four games, 11 total touchdowns. If you include the rushing, one interception. Right now, he is second to win NFL MVP over on FanDuel and also on DraftKings. You are seeing right now a quarterback that is playing at an incredibly high level. We have kind of gotten used to Mahomes kind of working into things. Maybe it's a little bit of a slow start. Is he still trying to figure out some things? And then he's ready to make that second half push. What you are seeing is greatness from the very, very beginning. One of the points that I have made over the last 2 years or so when we've had conversations about Mahomes and him either leaving the pocket too early or down the field accuracy, or why is he not putting numbers up the way that he did in the past? It has always been a surrounding cast argument to me. This is the best version of the Chiefs offensive line they've gotten in quite some time. This is the most complete wide receiver room that they've had in quite some time. And look at what you get on the back half. You have a quarterback right now that is playing as well as any quarterback in the National Football League. We know what he can do in December, January, and February. But in some regards, it's been putting up those big numbers, those gaudy numbers in the first portion of the season that has made people start to entertain the idea that Josh Allen is better, or entertain the idea for a time that Lamar Jackson was the best regular season quarterback in the league. Well, I think you see a dialed-in Patrick Mahomes with a capable offensive line, with the run game that is starting to emerge, with a wide receiver room that has multiple options and has their number one weapon back and is about to get their number one weapon back in Rashee Rice. You are seeing the best quarterback in the National Football League, and I don't think that it's relatively close. So one of the early thoughts that I have is this is the best version of Patrick Mahomes we've seen in probably 3 years. This is a quarterback that can win his third MVP. This is the best player in the world. That's what you are seeing on a game-in, game-out basis, which then leads me to the other thing. I know that the Chiefs won 15 games last year, but if we are really being honest and going back in time, we could see some of the warts that were on last year's Chiefs team. Now, I'm not going to call how they won fluky, but I think we can say that the Chiefs were fortunate to win some of the games that they won. And we have spoken about regression this season and how the Chiefs have regressed in some ways in those one score games. What goes up must come down. If you flip a coin, you got a 50% chance every single time. Well, the Chiefs got heads 11 straight times last year. And so far this season, they haven't in those kinds of games. But last year's Chiefs team, to me, didn't really pack a very serious punch and didn't really seem capable of knocking anybody out. We have seen the Chiefs knock two teams out in the last 3 weeks. They completely knocked out the Baltimore Ravens and played a very clean, nearly perfect game against the Ravens. Fast forward against a team that I think is the best team in the NFC, a true and legitimate Super Bowl contending team. Now, the Lions have injuries, but the Chiefs have injuries. The Chiefs didn't have their normal starting left tackle. The Chiefs don't have their number one wide receiver who is still on suspension. This is the middle portion of the NFL season. No one is 100% perfect. Everybody is missing something at this portion of the season. So cry me a river when we're talking about the Lions and their injuries. No one feels bad for you. It's a next man up mentality. The Chiefs ground and pound the Lions into submission yesterday. They were clearly the better team. And after the first couple of drives in that game, you really saw this defense really put them in a headlock where their last six drives, they got 156 yards on 30-something plays. You also saw this offense really flourish, and you saw the variety of weapons and the ease in which this offense can move the ball down the field. The Chiefs in 2025 may not have the same record as last year's team, and maybe they're going to have more ups and downs than last year's team just because of the early portion of the schedule. Their schedule, I think, is more difficult this year than it was last year. And honestly, you're kind of entering a softer spot of your schedule these next couple of weeks where you got Vegas at home. You also got the Commanders. But I think the Commanders are a good team. I just don't think they're a championship caliber team. And then it really starts to ratchet back up in the month of November when you go to Buffalo, when you play Denver, when you play Indianapolis, you play Dallas on Thanksgiving. I think the Chiefs are better equipped. I think they are more equipped to win a championship in 2025 than they were in 2024. If their offensive line continues to grow and continue to reach that level of cohesiveness, when you get back Rashee Rice, where you got two viable and dangerous weapons with Rashee Rice and Xavier Worthy, and then everybody else filling their position, if you continue to get the short yardage excellence that you've gotten from Kareem Hunt, and then you add in a little bit more Breshard Smith, you sprinkle in a little bit Isaiah Pacheco along the way, and the Chiefs defense continues to look like one of the five best defenses in the National Football League, the record may not be the same. This might be a team that goes 11-6 this year. This might be a team that wins 12 games this year, which is a decrease from last year, which is not going to reach some of the heights of last year. But I think this team is much better equipped to win a championship. This team is better equipped to fight back than I think last year's team was. I think last year's team was kind of fortunate to win those 15 games, that they probably were also an 11-12 win team that flipped the coin and they got it to land their way three straight times. I don't know if that's going to be the case for this team, but I think they're better for it. I think they're better and more complete offensively. I think you're going to see a defense that continues to figure things out as we get closer to the second half of the season and be more equipped in certain ways. I think you are seeing that at the height of it. If we were talking about ceiling, the best version of the 2025 team against the best version of the 2024, I think the Chiefs in 2025, they have a higher ceiling of the best version of themselves. We would question on a week-by-week basis last year what the A game for the Chiefs looked like. I think we've seen the A game for this year's team twice, which is scary because they don't have Rashee Rice. They played an A game against the Baltimore Ravens. They played an A game last night against the Detroit Lions, and they were really in control of that game for the last 40, 45 minutes or so. We can take your phone calls coming up on the other side. We also can read your text messages as well, 913-586-7965. I also want to remind you guys that our Monday coverage of football is presented by Busey Bank, where they're focused on your success. At Busey Bank, they've been building business and growing wealth since 1868. Learn more at buseybank.com. Coming up on the other side, we'll talk about the fight after the game, and every part of it is funny. We'll discuss it. Keep it right here. It's The Drive.
The Drive with CDOT. Tune in as Nate Taylor of ESPN joins the show in studio every Friday at 4 on your home for Chiefs football. 96.5 The Fan. The Drive, brought to you by DM Injury Law. Have you or a loved one been in a car wreck? Contact DM Injury Law today and get the money you deserve. Car wreck? Remember, Mike's got this.
Why does every recipe I try need 18 ingredients, including a jar of something paste I'll never use again but will sit in my fridge for 9 months? I just want dinner in the oven, fast. That's why I love Blue Apron's new one-pan assemble and bake meals. They send you fresh ingredients that are already chopped. All you do is put it all together and bake. That's it. No chopping, no weird leftovers, just delicious, easy-to-make meals. Get 20% off your first two orders with code APRON20. Terms and conditions apply. Visit blueapron.com/terms for more.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
You know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm going to tell you something about myself that some of you might already know, but it is a character trait that I realized about myself at a very young age, and that's kind of what fueled me for the profession that I chose. I would say that there are times that I am a very annoying individual. I think some of these times I am purposely annoying. Sometimes I know the exact buttons to get you guys riled up, and sometimes I do it just to do it. It entertains me. I've always been the kid that will like bother you and bother you and bother you until I see that you're actually really mad. I'm like, oh man, my bad. I didn't mean to do that. Like, I can acknowledge that about myself. It is a character trait that I have. I've never felt closer to Patrick Mahomes than I did yesterday, because I saw somebody who I think has some of those same abilities. He knew that that wasn't the time to talk to Brian Branch. He knew it. Now, I couldn't hear what Brian Branch was saying, but he had the energy of somebody who was kind of mad. You could just sense it on his body language. He had the energy of somebody that was kind of mad. Then Mahomes tries to dap him up, clearly like a, hey, bro, you lost. Good game. I probably would have just left him alone. I think that kind of triggered him, which was kind of funny to me that that happened. And then instead of kind of going after Pat, because you know you can't do nothing to Pat, like, come on now, you then go over to Juju. And Juju was just kind of over there, just minding his own little business. Just, I'm sure they're talking. I'm sure he says something. Brian Branch then goes up and sucker punches Juju Smith-Schuster. Now, maybe I shouldn't laugh at this, but the way that Juju fell to the ground, it was kind of funny to me. I kind of laughed a little bit. And then all of us need an Isaiah Pacheco in our lives. Isaiah Pacheco didn't flinch. There's usually three people in a fight. There's usually too cool to fight guy. There's usually the peacemaker, the guy that just wants to break it up, break it up, break it up. Like, he doesn't really want to fight, but you got to also look like you are diffusing the situation by, come on, come on, come on, come on, guys, come on, guys. And then there's one person that's always turned up and ready to go and ready to fight. And you know who Isaiah Pacheco is? Ready to fight individual. So then Pacheco gets up, and then he kind of holds up Brian Branch for long enough so then Juju can get one good lick in. And now they're on the ground and they're rumbling and it's just, it was a big mess. I'm sorry, this fight was hilarious. Now, I know they shouldn't be fighting after the game, but most of the time, sprinkling in a little brouhaha at the end of a sporting event usually makes it better. The game is better because of this brouhaha. Now, I don't think that much is going to happen to Isaiah Pacheco, aside from a fine. He should be fined for his role. Shouldn't be a big fine, but he's going to be fined. Juju is probably going to get a little bit of a fine for this, but that is going to pale in comparison to what should happen to Brian Branch. He should be suspended. And I'm usually not the guy that's advocating for suspensions or taking money out of guys' pockets. I'm usually not that guy. There's no reason for Brian Branch to play next week. He started a fight, seemingly for no other reason than he was mad. This next little bit I'm about to play for you guys, I've never heard a player say this before. Ever. Not in my entire life. I listen to players and coaches speak for a living. I've never heard what we're about to play for you before. I would have never said this out loud if I was Brian Branch. Listen to what he said after the game when he describes the interaction.
If in between the play and refs don't catch it, they're like, they be trying to bully me out there. Should have never did it. We beat ourselves, honestly.
What happened between the play? What are you referring to?
I got blocked in the back illegally and it was running the ref. The ref didn't do anything. And just stuff like that. And that's, I could have got hurt off of that. But it's still, I still shouldn't have done that. So.
All right. This is the thing that maybe I shouldn't laugh and maybe I should be more mature. Have you ever heard a football player on defense say that they're tired of being bullied? You're supposed to be the bully. I'll never forget this. There's some quotes that I've just heard in this job that always stick with me. Like I remember J.C. Pearson when I was a young broadcaster coming up. He was talking about motor and he said that some athletes just have that dog in them. It's something you can't coach. It's something you can't teach. It's something that God gives you. You just got it. We all know somebody who just, when it came to football, they just were wired a little differently than you were wired. I mean, you liked playing football. They loved playing football. They just love hitting other people. They were dogs. You weren't a dog. That's okay. The other thing I think in all of this, like that's one quote. And I remember another one, Joe Mays. Shout out to Joe Mays in the Maya Clinic. I remember one time he said, I chose to play defense because I wanted to be the hammer and not the nail. I was like, you know what? That makes a lot of sense. Like if you're going to be running around hitting people, you want to be the one doing the hitting. That makes a lot of sense to me. I've never heard a defensive player say, I'm tired of being bullied out there before. You're supposed to be the bully. Juju Smith-Schuster was bullying you? Isaiah Pacheco was bullying you? And you got mad so you had to fight after the game? Why didn't you do any of that fight during the game? Like when they were blocking you in the back during the game, why didn't you respond in that way? I mean, we've seen that happen during the game before. We've seen plenty of times where wide receiver and secondary player go head to head. When you were getting illegally blocked in the back, why didn't you turn around then at that moment and do something about it? You waited until after the game was over to then go up and sucker punch him? Please enjoy this suspension. I don't know who the Lions have in their next game, but I just know that Brian Branch can't be a part of it. Real shameful stuff. If anything, you should be suspended for saying that you're tired of getting bullied as a defensive player. Shameful work from the Detroit Lions. No, more specifically, shameful work from Brian Branch. Everybody else just acknowledges, hey, it's after the game. We understand tempers flare up. We get it. One person decided to be a sucker, and it was Brian Branch in this whole endeavor.
The whole thing was weird. I'll be the first to admit, I was talking to Cody and Gold about this. Game's over. I turn the TV off. I don't need to watch the kneel down to end the game. That's not really something that I think is ever going to be something that comes from the show. So I then check social media and I see what happened. And I am like awestruck by the fact that Brian Branch, based on every video you see, at the end of the game, walked over and basically sucker punched Juju. It was insane to me. And then for a guy that's been fined 13, 14 times and a guy that, you know, plays with an attitude, a chip on his shoulder. He's like the enforcer type of the Lions defense. For him to say, I shouldn't have done it, but I was tired of getting bullied is lame. I mean, don't get into a fight, first and foremost. But if you're going to start a fight, don't after the game say, well, it's because they were being mean to me.
That's what he said. He said they were being mean. That's what he said. He said that Juju Smith-Schuster and the Chiefs were being too mean to him, and he's tired of it. Shameful work. This isn't the Dan Campbell coach lines that I was expecting to see. Not at all. The text line is saying that I need to listen to the breathing in this. I didn't hear it. Maybe I wasn't missing it because I was so caught on him being talked about being bullied. All right, I'm going to play it one more time, and let me see if I hear what you guys. The text line is going crazy about this. Let me hear it.
In between the play, and refs don't catch it. Like, they were trying to bully me out there. I should have never did it. We beat ourselves, honestly.
What happened between the play? What are you referring to?
I got blocked in the back illegally, and it was running the ref. The ref didn't do anything, and just stuff like that. And that's, I could have got hurt off of that, but it's still, I still shouldn't have done that, so.
Yeah, that wasn't as, I mean, y'all kind of oversold that one. I mean, I heard it, but it wasn't that bad.
I actually think that may be one of the reporters.
Sure. Definitely was one of the reporters. And just the text line, the way they were hyping it up, you know, they go crazy. Before. Somebody breathing was comedic humor for them. Y'all really oversold. I was like, wait, hold on. Did I miss something? I didn't really sound that abnormal to me. Sound like a man that was trying to live. That's what it sounded to me. Sound like he was Brian Branch. Just trying to live is what it sounded like. You guys want to have this conversation now or later? Because I'm in a great mood. I'm going to tell you guys about the first Chiefs game that I've been to in like 5 years. I had a great time, went out after the game. I'm thrilled. So I'm in a fantastic mood. I know the text, why are you being negative? I just want to know if you guys are ready to have the Harrison Butker conversation now or you guys want to wait. Because I'm open to doing whatever you guys want to do when it comes to Harrison Butker. You know what I've determined? In my business, they call them staples. Like they're features, you know? Like when we run a promo because we tell you guys, so if you're listening to Fesco's show or you're listening at night or you're listening to something else, hey, Patrick Mahomes is going to be on the show Wednesday at 3:15. So in hopes that when you're in your car at 3:00, you think to yourself, oh, wait, Patrick Mahomes is going to be on the show. So then you run to the radio to turn it on. That's what keeps Rob and I employed. You know, Mitch Holthus comes on every Monday at 4:00. That's really important. It's one of our more popular segments. So it's important that you know when it is. Maybe we need to start scheduling every week Harrison Butker time. Now, I don't want to schedule Harrison Butker time every single week. And I'm just going to go out on a limb and I'm going to guess that not too many other cities have scheduled time to talk about their kicker. But maybe that's what we need to do and just leave it to that one designated spot every single week. Now, I would love to not have these conversations. And the beautiful thing about any staple is you can cancel it. We used to do Therapy Thursday. We don't do it anymore. We used to have Pick a Player. We don't do it anymore. So maybe we just need a standing appointment for time to talk about Harrison Butker. And then when it's no longer needed, we'll just move on. So I'm open for that. 913-586-7965. I guess a quick Harrison Butker thought. Very quick. I just don't know what to do or I don't know what to say about it because nothing is changing. It feels like complaining for the sake of complaining. Now, I don't have any problem with complaining. In fact, it's actually one of my favorite things to do. I get paid professionally. I'm a professional complainer. Complain dot. I love it. But I don't really know what to do with the frustration when it comes to Harrison Butker. I mean, yes, every week we have another miss or another mistake, or something happens from Harrison Butker, the Chiefs aren't bringing anybody in to work out, and he's 100% going to be on the team. I don't know what to do in that scenario. I don't have it in me to just come on here and just be mad for the sake of being mad, not when it's still beautiful outside, not when the weather's so crispy, not when the Chiefs just played one of their better games in the last 2-3 years or so. I don't have it in me. I don't know what to say about Harrison Butker. I mean, it's unfortunate. I wish that he would stop. I wish that he would start making all of the kicks that he's supposed to make. But I don't know if that's the case right now. maybe he's just in a little bit of a rut. I mean, everybody has a bad day. Everybody's a little bit down. You're allowed to be down. You're allowed to have a slump. But I don't know what to do with the Harrison Butker conversation. I don't have any new thoughts on Harrison Butker more than I've had. They can't cut him. They're not getting rid of him. He's been very reliable in the postseason, so they're going to ride it out and see if the things correct themselves. But I feel like we're all very stuck right now on what to do with their kicker.
I agree. But let me ask you this. Do you think their worry level has changed? Like, do you think we get a Nick Jacobs or a Pete Sweeney or a Nate Taylor tweet sometime this week that says something like, Chiefs are trying out blank kicker. He came in for a workout just for the sake of coming in for a workout. Do you think that happens this week? And I know that you're tired of having these conversations. Has your fear meter, has your worry meter changed at all with Harrison Butker?
It's the exact same. I have felt the exact same way about Harrison Butker for 3 weeks. You can go back and check the audio. You can check the tape. My stance on Harrison Butker, it hasn't changed. It's the same. I don't know what else to say or do about this. I think we all agree if Harrison Butker was a normal kicker, then we'd be having the conversation about them potentially bringing somebody in. They're not bringing somebody in. They're not doing anything. This is who you got for the kicker. So they have one choice. Make it better. Make it work. That's it. You went to the teacher and asked to do your group assignment with somebody else. She said no. This is who you've been paired with. Go get an A. I feel stuck. I would love to complain about Harrison Butker. I'd love for them to bring somebody in, at least put a little scare into him. At least let him show up to work one day and watch some 25-year-old kicker kick field goals. I mean, we promote competition at every other position on the field. If this was a running back that fumbled three straight weeks, we'd be advocating for them to bring somebody in on a workout. If this was a corner that couldn't catch, that's what we'd be advocating for. But I don't know what you do with Harrison Butker other than hope, pray. That's where I am. I don't know what else to say. I don't have any other commentary about Harrison Butker. This is who you got. This is it. This is what you got. Make it work. That's what it is. Can they trade for Cairo Santos? No. There's no question related to kicker that you guys can ask that does not end with Harrison Butker is the kicker for the Kansas City Chiefs. You can ask any scenario. They're not bringing somebody in. They're not trading for anybody. They're not cutting them. This is who they got. So Dave Tobe, coach them up. Here, coach them up. This is what you got. Make it work. They can't do this every week. We all know that. They cannot do this every week.
You say they can't, and I don't disagree, but they have been. It's been 6 weeks. We have made it through the entire Rashee Rice suspension. You know how long we talked in the offseason about Rashee Rice suspension? It was days, weeks, months of content we talked about it. We have now made it through the wilderness of the Rice suspension. And you know what we've had in all 6 weeks? A Butker mistake. There's been a missed extra point, a missed field goal, kicking the ball out of bounds. Like, I agree with you. They're stuck because of his contract, and we can have a conversation about if that contract is good or bad now because it looks real bad, but you're not even – you, the Chiefs, Brett Veach, Clark Hunt, no one is entertaining. Hey, let's just get a guy in here, and let's just stick him on the practice squad as a fail-safe because you can't – there is absolutely no reason that – I assume Fesco did it. I assume Cody and Gold did it, and we do it every week. There's no reason the kicker should come up. None.
Unless
he made six straight game winners, which he hasn't.
I mean, I hear you. I don't know what to tell you. I'm with you. The top text, who cares? Okay, all right. We can move on. Guy misses every week. Guy just seems important. Someone on the text line says, let me find this out. Text line 913-586-7965. Chris Jones was doing nothing for the first five games of the season. He seemed to figure it out. Butker will also figure it out. He missed the one, but the rest were money. Seems like a mental block. If that's the stance that we have is that we've accepted that he's going to go 4-5 from the field and he's going to miss extra points and miss field goals and not be as reliable from 50 yards out anymore. Okay. I mean, I'm not here to argue with anybody today. I'm really not. We're all on the same page today. I've just accepted this is who Harrison Butker is. That's why we're going to start now at 2:30 every Monday. We're just going to have Harrison Butker time, and we're going to talk about the miss of the week. That's what we're going to have.
Except for some Tuesdays. There will be a couple Tuesdays at 2:30.
You know how I was on the Kiss cam? They should have the miss cam. That's what they should have. And just show a picture of him. That's what it is. So, I mean, hey, if you guys aren't worried about it, I'm not worried about it. Again, I'm really not here to argue today. We are all on the same side. I want you to know that we are all working together today, and I'm ready to move on. Who cares about the kicker? I don't care. That's perfectly fine. Let's move on. Let's talk about their left tackle, the one that played yesterday, not the other left tackle, where I don't really know where he is or what happened, but we don't got to talk about that right now. Why don't we just keep it positive? Jalen Moore deserves a lot of credit for yesterday. A whole lot of credit. I'm guessing, just going to go out on a limb and guess, Jalen Moore is pretty frustrated with his role. He was a backup in San Francisco. I'm assuming when he was interviewing to go work for the Chiefs, I mean, that's what free agency is. You were interviewing to go work for the Chiefs. I'm pretty sure they told you that you were going to start. And then plans changed. And now you know what? You didn't even get a chance to compete for your job. They just took it from you. We have not heard anything from Jalen Moore. He has just kept his head down, done the work, played, practiced, done everything he's supposed to do. Yesterday, Jalen Moore and his wife, they had a kid yesterday. I don't think anybody would have been mad if Jalen Moore had just said, you know what? I'm not playing today. Or, hey, I'm just going to be a DMP. I'm going to be on the inactives. Why is Jalen Moore on the inactive today? He's with his wife who just had a kid. Oh, okay, yeah, that makes sense. Leaves his wife. Goes to play, hasn't played football in, we're guessing, 8 months. I mean, in terms of this level of play, not preseason. I mean, a real actual game. Hasn't played in 8 months and was fantastic yesterday against one of the better pass rushes, against one of the better teams in the National Football League. A+, gets the game ball yesterday, gets singled out by your coach and by your teammates for just stepping in. That's what next man up looks like. That's the definition of next man up. I don't know why Josh Simmons wasn't there. I imagine at some point we'll get some clarity on where Josh Simmons was. It didn't matter. You had an opening. You had a vacancy. Jalen Moore stepped in, performed at a really high level. Maybe Jalen Moore is on the team next year. Maybe he's not on the team. But I do know one thing. The resume that you have put together, whether it was stepping in for Trent Williams in San Francisco and being a plus starter when you got the opportunity, filling in for Josh Simmons when you got no number one reps all week. You had not been practicing with the ones. Why would you have been practicing with the ones? You ain't been playing. And then you stepped in and played like that on Sunday Night Football. Jalen Moore deserves all the credit for how he played yesterday on Sunday Night Football. All the credit in the world.
I mean, first things first, you're 1,000% correct. Jalen Moore. I mean, if it weren't for the fight, Jalen Moore starting left tackle made them the biggest story of the game. I was texting with some friends when I think it was Ian Rappaport first had the report that Josh Simmons was going to miss the game due to personal reasons. A lot of my group friends in my group text were saying, oh, a backup left tackle against Aiden Hutchinson is scary. It just is. I think a lot of Chiefs fans felt that same fear because they had the, you know, scars of what happened in the Super Bowl last year, the backup left tackle. They carry those scars from the Super Bowl against the Bucks, a backup left tackle. Jalen Moore is not a backup left tackle. I mean, he is based on the depth chart. Like, I get that he is the swing tackle, but he is a starting caliber left tackle in the NFL. It's not just that he played well. That in and of itself is good. He did that against Aiden Hutchinson. You think Aiden Hutchinson is a defensive player of the year type, and he did a really good job against that guy.
I do.
We presume on short notice, get in there, go get him. I know you said there, I don't know if he's going to be on the team next year. I know this. They can't let him not be on the team next year. He seems like the perfect right tackle of the future. Or at the very least, keep making $10 million to be a swing tackle. Because the Chiefs, if they get into a bad situation to tackle, they're fine because they have him and a performance like that.
No, I'm 100% with you. He was very, very big. I mean, I would say that, I mean, in a roundabout way, things ended up working out at least in the short term. I still don't know if it's a good contract to give your sixth offensive lineman as much money as they paid him to essentially not play. But we all considered him. I mean, once you knew that Josh Simmons was going to be the starter, he became the break in case of an emergency. They had an emergency. They had a flat tire. They had a spare. They put the spare on. The spare did exactly what it was supposed to do. So you got to give him a lot of credit for that. I got a lot of respect for that Lions team, a lot of respect for that Lions defensive line. You did not notice that they did not have their starting left tackle yesterday. That's the guy that they went out in free agency, and they identified on day one of free agency, that's who we need. You guys remember back when we were having this conversation in the spring, I said I thought Jalen Moore was the best possible option for the Chiefs. Now, I didn't know that they were going to draft somebody also in addition to going out to get Jalen Moore. But if you wanted an established veteran who could come in and play at that position and you weren't going to break the bank for Dan Moore, who probably got overpaid, but you didn't want to trust a rookie, which they ended up trusting a rookie, I thought that Jalen Moore was the right answer to it. Good contract, good player, easily can step in. We've seen the ability to play left tackle and right tackle. It was a win, and you saw it. You saw how they could identify it, and they did so when it came to free agency. Someone on the text line said, C-Dot, I think you're a little bit too hard on Harrison Butker. Name a kicker that makes all of his kicks. No, that's a very fair point. I don't think anyone's expecting him to be 100% from the field. I mean, right now, Harrison Butker is 24th in terms of percentage in the National Football League. He is making 78% of his kicks so far this season among kickers. It's that. It's also the missed extra points so far this year. Out of qualified kickers this year, so out of guys who have kicked, not just like a one-off, he has missed the most extra points in the National Football League. So I don't think that anyone is expecting perfection right now from Harrison Butker. But the same way we talk about this at other positions, if you spend a lot of money on right tackle like the Chiefs did for Jawan Taylor, you expect to get premium right tackle play. When you get George Karlaftis big-time money, you expect big-time production. The Chiefs have the most expensive kicker in the league. No one thinks right now they have the best kicker in the league. They don't have one of the 5 or 10 best kickers in the league. So that's, I think, the problem that people have with Harrison Butker. And when you've been as reliable as he's been in the past, and people now notice a pretty clear sign of whether you would call it a decline, regression, whatever you think that it is. I mean, for him to have the most missed extra points in the league is alarming. For him to be below average when we are talking about kickers in terms of percentage and also not having the distance that you're going to need. I know the kicks aren't super important now. Man, they're going to get very important very soon, and the weather is about to change. It's going to get harder to kick these field goals coming up in a bit because it's about to get colder. So if you're missing a lot of these kicks when it's warm outside, what does that mean in a month when it's cold outside and that ball is like a rock? Coming up on the other side, we'll talk about the Missouri Tigers, who did Missouri Tiger things on Saturday. Keep it right here. It's The Drive.
The Drive with Carrington Harrison on your home for Kansas City sports. 96.5, The Fan, brought to you by DM Injury Law. Have you or a loved one been in a car wreck? Contact DM Injury Law today and get the money you deserve. Car wreck? Remember, Mike's got this.
I'm done with subscriptions. Streaming, fitness, razors, vitamins. I've got subscriptions for everything in my life. They lock you in, and half the time, I can't figure out how to unsubscribe. That's why I'm so excited about the new Blue Apron. Now you can get delicious meals delivered with no subscription needed, including new pre-made options. Keep the flavor. Ditch the subscription. Get 20% off your first two orders with code APRON20. Terms and conditions apply. Visit blueapron.com/terms for more.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland you know, think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
You know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos.
Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Coming up at the top of the hour, we will talk about me going to Arrowhead for the first time in 5 years. Usually, I'll just watch the game at home. But I decided to go to the game yesterday. I'll tell you about my experience coming up in just a bit. Now, if you guys would allow me to just use this time for a little bit of a venting session. And it's not that Missouri played poorly in the game. It is not. I thought Missouri played well. I mean, they didn't play well enough to beat Alabama, but Alabama might be the best team in the SEC. They are certainly in the conversation. Tomorrow, if Texas A&M and Alabama played each other, I'd pick Alabama to win. Tomorrow, if Ole Miss and Alabama played each other, I'd pick Alabama to win. Alabama might be the best team in the SEC. So losing to Alabama is not a big deal. And it is the college football playoff. All the goals that Missouri has in front of them, they are still right there. So I don't want to come off like I think all is lost for Missouri. I don't think that. But I guess this would be my thing. And for some whatever reason, I become public enemy number one with Mizzou fans for I feel like being the only person that's willing to have an honest conversation about what their ceiling is in the SEC. Over the last 10 years, what would you say is Missouri's best win in the conference? Not best win as a program. What do you think their best win in the SEC is? Because if Missouri is going to break through this ceiling of they are a very good program, look at their record. I don't care what conference you're in. I don't care what schedule you get. It is hard to be much better than Missouri has been in college football the last couple of seasons. They have been one of the better teams in college football the last couple of years. But I feel like what has happened with Missouri is, and maybe this is like a false sense of security, Missouri, I would say, has been able to avoid the real power teams of the SEC the last couple of seasons. The schedule has just broken their way. And one of the reasons why Missouri fans like myself are so optimistic in their ability to be able to make the college football playoff is they don't play all of the really good teams. Well, at some point, if you were going to break through that, you have to beat one of those teams. That is the only possible way to go to the college football playoff. You can't avoid all of them in your schedule. So at some point, you gotta beat LSU. At some point, you gotta beat Alabama. You gotta beat Texas A&M. You gotta beat Ole Miss. That's how you get to the destination. That's how you get there. Missouri, over the last 3 years, they went 11-2, 10-3. They're 5-1 right now. What's been their best win over the last three seasons? Their best win is Tennessee. And not even like the playoff version of Tennessee. I mean, the year before that, their best win is a bowl game against Ohio State, in which Ohio State top five starters didn't play. They've had some very exciting, very thrilling wins. Missouri has been very, very good. They are firmly in tier two in the SEC and college football, and that's a really, really difficult thing to get to. But if you were talking about them making the college football playoff, if you were talking about them potentially becoming one of the powers in the SEC, Eli, you got to win one of these games, or you got to win them occasionally. No one goes undefeated in these games. No one shoots 100% from the field. You don't have one of them. You don't have a marquee win against any of those teams. You never beaten Alabama. You never beaten Ole Miss. You never beaten Texas A&M. You have one win against a down LSU team on a COVID year. You don't have any of the marquee wins that you potentially need, the resume that you would potentially need. So if Missouri's hope to make the college football playoff is the schedule breaks the right way, that's about to change here very soon. They're changing the way they do the scheduling. Missouri has road games at Alabama and at LSU and at Ole Miss next year. The cupcake schedule that's been put together, that's done. That's over. That ride is over. I don't want to overreact. They lost a home game to Alabama. They're one of the five best teams in the country, in my opinion. You got a road game against Auburn. You're better than Auburn. You are a better football team than Auburn is. You got to figure out a way to win. I think you're a better team than Vanderbilt. I know it's on the road. You got to do something really difficult now. It's the middle of October. Missouri still hasn't played a road game yet. It's October 13th, and they're just preparing for the first time to go on the road into a difficult place to play. 80,000, 85,000 seat venue. Missouri's probably, what, 3.5? I haven't seen the spread. I don't even know what it is. Probably a 3.5-point favorite, 4.5-point favorite.
I can look it up real quick.
You got to figure out a way to win these next two games. You got to figure out a way. You played the best team that's left on your schedule. Every other team that you got, you either play them at home or it's winnable. That's where I am with Mizzou. You got to get one of these wins. That's the only way you can take that next step. That's it. That's the only possible way.
Missouri is right now on FanDuel a 1.5-point dog.
Oh, they're a dog. Oh, wow. I'm way off.
I'm confused by this. Jackson Arnold still playing at Auburn?
He is.
Did someone else see a different Auburn game this weekend? Mizzou plus 1.5?
You going to take Missouri on the money line?
Yeah. Auburn. Okay. Auburn's not good.
Okay.
I'll say this about Missouri.
I thought Missouri would have been favored in that game.
I thought so too. I'll say this about Missouri.
I'm bad at guessing the lines. I'm actually really bad at it.
It's an inexact science if you're
I'm terrible. I don't mind admitting I'm terrible.
Let me ask you this about Missouri, because you're the Missouri fan. Do you think Eli Drinkwitz can get past that hurdle? Because Gary Pinkel did.
It took a while, but he eventually got there.
It took a while, but he started beating the Oklahoma types, and they changed conferences. He beat Georgia. Like he beat Florida when Florida was still one of those teams.
Not Georgia wasn't a national power at that point,
but
I would argue.
Was.
But Georgia was good.
A&M had a Heisman Trophy winner on the field, and they beat A&M. Like, they went to multiple SEC championship games. They were in a game with Auburn all the way to the end in one of the SEC title games. Like, Gary Pinkel took a long time to overcome that hurdle. If nowadays making the playoff is easier, like, can Drinkwitz overcome that hurdle? Because look at the schedule. You're right. There are a lot of teams you're even with, but there's a lot of numbers next to their team's name. Vanderbilt's good. Apparently Auburn is a favorite. Oklahoma, I don't know what John Mateer is, but they're good this year. Like, there's a lot of Mississippi State's, you know, spicy. They're not good, but they're not a pushover. Like,
yeah, got him at home, though. You got to feel good about that. You got him at home. And it's later in the year. Yeah, you got to feel good about that.
I mean
what you're asking is the million-dollar question. I don't have a good answer to it. Eli Drinkwitz has gotten Missouri, I think, I would say 85%, 90% of where Gary Pinkel got him. Like, they are very, very good. I mean, you win 11 games. I don't care what conference you're in. You win 11 games in a power conference, you are a good team. You win 10 games like you did last year in a power conference, you are a good team. When they played any of the teams last year that we thought could go to the college football playoff, they got the brakes beat off of them last season. A&M beat the brakes off of them. Alabama beat the brakes off of them last year. This year, in a coin flip game that was tied in the second half, you're at home. You got to figure out a way to win this game. You have to figure out a way. Now, you put more pressure on yourself. Now, I would say, in back-to-back weeks, you got to figure out a way to win. Where if you had won the game against Alabama, all you really got to do is split one of those two road games. Certainly no shame in losing on the road in the SEC. You got to win both of those games now at Auburn and then turn around and win at Vanderbilt. I'm not going to say it's impossible. I don't think that either one of those teams are better than Missouri, but you got to start racking up some marquee signature wins if you are the Missouri Tigers. If you want to be a playoff team. If not, you can just keep being a team that wins 9 games. You'll go to the Music City Bowl. You'll play Wisconsin, and it'll be great. You can go to the Las Vegas Bowl, and you'll play USC in there, which is a really, really good bowl. It's just a bowl game that only Missouri fans care about. It's not a bowl game that anybody outside of Missouri fans or whatever team they're playing cares about. There's only a handful of games in December that people care about. And the goal right now in college football is to try to play in those games. And to play in those games, you got to do what Indiana just did. You got to win those kind of games, or you got to figure out a way to take care of business at home when you get the opportunity. You got to go on the road and beat somebody. That's how you end up finding yourself in the college football playoff. Coming up at the top of the hour, I went to Arrowhead for the first time in 5 years. I'll talk about my experience. Keep it right here. It's The Drive.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns.
And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns.
You know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys?
Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos.
Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.